Hello, and welcome to part 14 of my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley, and I'm a professor in the Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where I've been teaching an undergraduate class titled Antarctic Ecology, Geology, History, and Policy. In this podcast, I've distilled this class down into numerous parts that cover all these topics about Antarctica. Part 14 presented here is on the events leading up to the International Geophysical Year in Antarctica and the impact it had on the continent. Previously, I covered the Heroic Age, which was a formative period in Antarctic history. It was when the first comprehensive expeditions for science and exploration were completed on the Antarctic continent. However, following Shackleton's death in 1922, no major expedition occurred to Antarctica until 1928, when a naval aviator, Richard Byrd, ventured south with ambitions to be the first person to fly over the South Pole. Byrd had already done this at the North Pole, though there is some controversy as to whether he really made it to that pole or not. But he beat Roald Amundsen from his planned flight to do this by one day. Now, Byrd wanted to be the first person to fly over both poles, so he raised private funds and traveled by ship to the Ross Sea, setting up his base camp, Little America, on the Ross Ice Shelf, near the Bay of Whales and Amundsen's old hut. This was the first multiple-building base in Antarctica and included radio towers, a hangar for his planes, a meteorological station, dog teams, and even a gymnasium for his men to use during the long winter months. His station thus became a model for future stations to make life easier and winters more tolerable in the Antarctic. The next summer, in November 1929, Byrd completed a successful flight over the pole in 15 hours, 51 minutes, barely making it to the top of the polar plateau by tossing out extra food and other supplies to lighten the plane. Down below on the ground, a party led by the geologist Lawrence Gould was following the flight route to lay depots in case the plane needed to land on the way to or from the pole. This party with Gould also completed geological studies and discovered new mountains and sedimentary rocks, showing that not all of Antarctica was volcanic. Byrd was celebrated in the U.S. for his achievement and was promoted to Rear Admiral. He returned to Antarctica to build Little America II in 1934, again backed by private funding, this time to do more scientific research. His group spent a year gathering data on climate, the atmosphere, and completed a long tractor journey to explore inland. They also completed more flights and discovered that there was not a strait between the Ross and Weddell Seas, and confirmed that Antarctica was one large continent. Scientists on his expedition found more life than expected, documenting the first detailed studies of microorganisms in snow, air, water, and soil, with 178 species of bacteria identified. They were the first to enter Marie Byrd Land, named in honor of Byrd's wife, and found that meteorites bombarded Earth more than previously known, and set the foundation for modern scientific studies in Antarctica. They also set up a post office and sent the first mail, postmarked and canceled, from Antarctica to the U.S. and other countries, though not without a few problems. About the time Byrd was establishing Little America 1 and 2, the first territorial claims for specific regions of Antarctica were being made. Britain issued the Ross Sea Dependency in 1923 that declared all lands between 150 degrees west and 160 degrees east longitude for New Zealand, which includes all the Ross Sea region. This claim had followed Britain's 1908 Falkland Islands dependency that claimed the Falkland and the South Orkney, Sandwich, and Shetland Islands, as well as the Antarctic Peninsula. Chile and Argentina were already claiming overlapping territories in the peninsula region. France claimed Adélie Land, where Point Geology was located in East Antarctica, which led to Australia claiming a large swath of land that covered the rest of East Antarctica. Norway claimed parts of the Weddell Sea area for a total now of seven claimant nations. A large section of Marie Byrd Land remained unclaimed, with the U.S. expected to claim it, but never did. I'll talk more about that later. In 1939, the U.S. Congress established the U.S. Antarctic Service and sent Richard Byrd back for more research and to establish Little America III, located 6 miles north of the previous bases. In this expedition, he returned with the first color photographs of Antarctica and new data on the continent. Further work was interrupted by World War II, until the then-now Admiral Byrd was sent back to establish more of a U.S. presence in Antarctica in Operation High Jump in 1946. This was a major operation involving three groups and 13 ships, including two icebreakers, and Byrd established Little America 4 near 3. This operation succeeded in completing many more aerial surveys. They discovered more mountain ranges and mapped considerably more coastline in East Antarctica than previous expeditions. It was also the first expedition to use helicopters and icebreakers. In the 1950s, problems in radio communications provided the impetus to have an International Year of Science to better understand electrical geophysics and the Earth's magnetic field. Advances in rocket science, seismology, and computing by that time led a physicist, Lloyd Berkner, to propose an International Geophysical Year with international cooperation to study the Earth's surface and atmosphere, with Antarctica as the focus. His British colleague, Sidney Chapman, suggested they have this year in 1957 to 1958, when sunspot activity would be high, contrasting with the International Polar Year of 1932 and 1933, when sunspot activity was low. Thus, the IGY was formed, and 12 countries participated with research in Antarctica, including all claimant nations, plus Japan, the U.S., the USSR, South Africa, and Belgium. A total of 64 nations participated in the IGY with research stations in other parts of the world as well. The IGY turned out to be 18 months long, from June 1957 to December 1958, and was to officially begin on 1 July 1957. As a prelude to this year, Admiral Byrd was sent to Antarctica one last time in 1955 to 1956 in Operation Deep Freeze to establish 7 U.S. bases in Antarctica, including McMurdo and Hallett stations in the Ross Sea and the Amundsen-Scott station at the South Pole. Admiral Byrd did not spend too much time in Antarctica on this operation, though. His health was failing, and he died in 1957 and is buried in Arlington Cemetery. In total, 40 stations were established by 12 nations during the IGY. Also in 1958, the Scientific Committee for Antarctic Research, or SCAR, was established. It was an international committee dedicated to Antarctic research that included delegates from all countries that had active research programs there. It is still one of the most effective international communities ever formed. The international cooperation among scientists worldwide paid off from the beginning of the IGY, when a solar flare was registered by a station near Moscow on June 28, 1957. This station sent out an alert to all other cooperating nations, and when the solar particles from this flare reached Earth 17 hours later, it was possible for the first time to map its effects on radio communication and the ionosphere across the globe. Many hoped that such widespread scientific cooperation, or the world studying itself, as stated by Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, would lead to world peace. But then, on October 27th of that year, the Soviets launched their Sputnik 1 satellite, the first into space, that took the world by surprise, including the U.S. This launch initiated the space race that became part of the Cold War. The IGY continued, though, and the U.S. began sending up its own satellites. One, the Explorer 4, had radiation detectors on board, and the data it sent back helped determine the presence of the Van Allen radiation belts. These belts are caused by the Earth's magnetosphere and form a protective shield around the Earth that traps solar winds, keeping them from destroying our atmosphere. As for solar flares, 44 stations across the globe studied different aspects of these to gain a better understanding of their effects on Earth's atmosphere. Much was learned about these flares and the radiation they generated, including X-rays and other shortwave radiation. In Antarctica, the U.S. was establishing its Amundsen-Scott base at the South Pole, while seismic and geologic studies were being completed at Little America and other stations. They discovered, among other things, that much of the West Antarctic continent under the ice was below sea level. Glaciologists learned more about the Ross Ice Shelf, variations in its thickness and how it formed. Soviet scientists at their Vostok base on the polar plateau discovered a valley buried in ice that was more than 800 miles long. The British, at their newly established Holly station on the Brunt Ice Shelf in the Weddell Sea, initiated atmospheric studies there. Their measurements of ozone provided the longest timeline on the levels of this gas in our upper atmosphere and helped document the loss of ozone in the 1980s due to anthropogenic chemicals such as chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, used in aerosols and refrigerants. Without these baseline measurements, the ozone loss may not have been recognized in time to stop it, causing harmful radiation to reach Earth's surface. Many other countries made important new scientific discoveries about our Earth, oceans, and atmosphere during the IGY. An excellent and detailed book about the achievements in the IGY and the history leading up to it is called Assault on the Unknown, published in 1961 by Walter Sullivan. Overall, the IGY was a great success, with the discovery of the Van Allen belts in space, the initiation of atmospheric studies on ozone and other gases, and new data on glacial dynamics. Although not part of the IGY, the first studies on penguins and their ability to produce and hatch eggs in the cold Antarctic environment were initiated using the research stations as bases of operation. Most importantly, though, the IGY became the genesis for the Antarctic Treaty, the most successful international treaty ever formed. Thank you for listening to my podcast, All About Antarctica. I'm Dr. Steve Emsley of the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and I hope you tune in to Part 15, The Antarctic Treaty.